Today on the podcast, a mantelpiece moment that reflects upon the last year, a novel that slithers in, and of course, the weekly reveal to what magical book I have pulled down from my to-be-read shelf. All of that and more this week on A Novel Review. Hello and welcome to the literature podcast, A Novel Review. My name is Seamus, your host, and together we will discuss, dissect, and explore the wonderful world of literature. And the wonderful world of literature is a vast and dense jungle. So let's start making our way through, one book at a time. Hey guys, welcome back. Another day, another episode. Same host. My name is Seamus. I am the host of this podcast. It is a book podcast. And for today's episode, book two of the Harry Potter franchise, The Chamber of Secrets, of course. But before I slither into this book, I always take a moment to reflect on any mantelpiece moments, something to highlight from the week past. And this week, nothing really that literary beyond the fact that this is episode 52, which I guess, by the laws of one episode a week, means that this is the 1 year anniversary of A Novel Review, which is, actually kind of weird to think about. It's gone really fast for me. I've had an absolute blast. I've had a lot of fun doing this. I hope you guys have had a great time listening as well. But 52, you kind of don't realize how many books, you know, I mean, like, it's 52 books, but I kind of think back to, I don't know, Richard Marsh's The Beetle, I guess, Orlando, As I Lay Dying, a bit of Juniper Barnes in there. Like, I've just read so many good books, and you kind of actually lose sight of that sometimes. So, great chance to sort of look back and think about the year that's gone. But also very, very excited for the next year as well. And, thanks so much, guys. It's really just a moment to say thank you so much. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for liking, subscribing, all that jazz. It really helps the pod. So thank you so much. I hope you've enjoyed the last year, and I hope you enjoy the next year. Oh yeah, here we go. The Chamber of Secrets, the second novel in the Harry Potter franchise, in the Harry Potter series, and my goodness, did I smash through this book. Looking back, I think I might have been a bit harsh on Philosopher's Stone because it was, you know, the first book of the series. Because there's a lot of character development, there's a lot of establishment, there's world building there. But I mean, if you want to hear that, just sort of go listen to the first episode, I guess. I don't need to repeat any of that. But The Chamber, in my opinion, is just, much better reading experience. Again, that sort of sounds like I'm, you know, just shit-talking Philosopher's Stone, which I'm not trying to. I just think you sort of enter the Chamber of Secrets, you know the characters, you know the story that's been developed, you understand enough to know exactly what's going on and what's going to come, and then you're just off to the races, and I'm holding it upside down. It just becomes this really fun and enjoyable read, so I think we need to dive into an overview. It is the summer break, and we are back with Harry at the Dursleys. They are just as horrible as last time. Just as horrible as the first book, but while we are there, we are introduced to a fan favorite character, Dobby the House Elf, of course, who tries to stop Harry from returning to Hogwarts. Well, after a daring escape to his best friend Ron's house and issues with platform 9 3/4, Harry does make it back to Hogwarts for another year of mischief and mayhem. Things sort of spiral out of control when Harry begins to hear voices in the walls that no one else can hear, and another mystery arises, with the heir of Slytherin opening the Chamber of Secrets with the intention of killing muggles. And I know I have missed out a lot of information there, but that is kind of the bare bones of the story. I just want to take a little moment now to discuss something that's different from the films to the books, which I know I probably shouldn't be doing because this is a book podcast and it shouldn't really relate to the films, but I just wanted to discuss a scene that takes place in the books that is so much better than the films, and I just, like, for the life of me, I cannot understand why it was changed at all. It's the scene where they are going to Diagon Alley to purchase their year's worth of supplies for Hogwarts. They go there every year to buy their, you know, their books and whatever. They're traveling by flu powder, which Harry has never traveled by, and in the films, Ron is like, oh, Harry's never traveled by flu powder. And then Molly Weasley, the mother, is like, well, show him how to do it. So he picks up flu powder and goes, Diagon Alley, throws down the flu powder and goes up in blue flames and vanishes. And then Harry's like, whoa, what the hell? That was crazy. Picks up the flu powder and Molly's like, remember, boy, speak really, really clearly. And, I mean, Harry famously goes, Diagon Alley. And it's just, it's just an absurd scene because, well, it's not that absurd a scene because it just looks ridiculous in the moment. But then you read the book, and what actually happens in the book is he picks up the flu powder, and just as he's going to say Diagon Alley and throw it down, he sort of breathes in a bit of the dust and just sort of chokes as he's saying the word Diagon Alley, the same way if you picked up, like, a handful of cinnamon or something like that and just sort of choked on it, which is, you know, incredibly logical. It's incredibly natural. It's believable as well. And that's what happens in the book. And I think it's just, it's one of those moments where I was like, why when they were writing the films did they think that this was a scene that, one, needed to be changed, and two, that was the appropriate change to make Harry look like an idiot? You know, it's like they sat down and thought, how can we turn Harry to just look like the biggest idiot in the world? Because he's been to Diagon Alley before. He was there last year to buy his stuff. He just heard Ron literally say, Diagon Alley. And he says, Diagon Alley. And it just kind of, it really kind of annoyed me, actually, because it just, who approves this kind of nonsense? Who looked at this scene in the book and thought, no, we're going to improve upon this by making him look like a complete idiot? And it just sort of irked me a lot. You know, obviously, when you are getting an adaption, a film adaption from a book, I sort of teeter between wanting a bit of change. You know, you want a bit of artistic freedom from the director and the writers to add in a bit of flair, their own sort of flavor to the story. But I'm also on the other side, want it to be completely faithful, which can be quite rigid at times. But yeah, this was not the scene to change, in my opinion. This was absolutely absurd because, yeah, it just makes Harry look like a complete idiot when it made complete logical sense in the book. And I don't even understand how the thought came up to change that scene. So, I don't know, just sort of thought I'd take a moment to whinge, because what better time to whinge than on a book podcast, right? Yeah, absurd in my mind, absurd. But let's move on, because I can't spend the whole episode just whinging about the film, because we could be here for quite a while then. I think what I really enjoyed about this book is the addition of a chamber. I don't think I'd be alone in saying that the idea of living in a big, really expansive, especially magical castle, but a big, big castle is actually quite an enticing one, and one that as a child I would have really wanted to do, because there's nothing more fun than sort of roaming the halls of a giant castle and exploring and finding, secret passageways or something like that. And it's this really kind of interesting adventure idea that is really fun, and it is this big magical castle. And I think the idea of this Chamber of Secrets, I mean, it's such a fun name as well, the Chamber of Secrets, you know, what secrets is it holding? But it's this idea that not even Dumbledore knows it's there, and, you know, you'd think someone that's as sort of well-versed in the magical world, and, you know, he's known as sort of the best magical mind sort of at the moment, if not ever, that he doesn't even know where this chamber is in his own sort of backyard. Is just, it's really, like, it's a really interesting idea, and I think it really piques that childhood idea of exploration and adventure. And I think that was one of my favorite parts of the book, was this idea of a chamber of secrets just hidden within the, yeah, so I feel like I'm just repeating myself now, but it was just such a fantastic idea, and I really enjoyed it. And I think something else I really enjoyed about this book was, even though it's still quite early in the stages of the overarching story, in terms of the Harry Potter series, and they're still quite young in this, I think there must be 12, it actually sees the introduction of some more wider, this might be weird to say, some socio-political issues, and that is the exploration of the muggles, the non-wizarding folk like you and I, and that's sort of the most offensive word you can call them, which is mudbloods. And it's this idea, and I guess duality, of the purebloods, which are the pure traditional wizarding families from where the beginning of time, I guess, mixing, well, not necessarily mixing, but it was the introduction of wizarding folk that are not purebloods, that are muggles, and it's sort of this duality between them, and it sort of really shines through in, specifically Draco Malfoy, And Slytherin as a whole, I know I'm kind of pegging them all under one sort of idealism, but they are kind of portrayed as this bad house, which, you know, is sort of a whole different issue in itself, but I won't get into that just yet. But I guess, you know, it's this kind of idea of ridiculousness. And if we liken it to our own sort of human history, there's, I guess, sort of the easiest answer to liken them to is kind of like the Aryan race, the Nazi idealism of the Aryan race, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, the perfect human being. And that's kind of what it felt like for me reading it, you know, what the Pure Bloods want to hold on to. It's this, yeah, they want their blood to be pure, which is kind of, I mean, it's the kind of great irony of it, because Voldemort, who really pushes this idea, and it's one of his main central ideas, although we don't really know that at this stage, it sort of comes a bit later on in the text. But his dad was a muggle, so the great hypocrite of history, which is, you know, I mean, yeah, blonde hair, blue eyes for the Nazis, and Hitler had brown hair. So, you know, it's kind of this duality between the Mudbloods and the Purebloods, which I really enjoyed, actually, because it brings that depth to the story, and I think that's really important for developing the story and to understand where it's actually heading to. And I think, to continue just touching upon this, I think the story really intelligently touches upon these differences, because on one side we're kind of told that you're either, you know, you're either a Pureblood or you're, you know, an outcast, a Mudblood, whereas the writing actually reveals that the characters feel they're very individualistic. They're sort of written as very individualistic without being overtly obvious, and because of that we feel quite individualistic in ourselves as we're reading. You know, this is an idea that's continuously encouraged. We're always aware that the Weasleys, especially in this story, because we actually visit their home, but they are pure bloods themselves, but they're not very wealthy, and it's not a big deal, because it's always their kindness that shines through, along with, you know, their own good humour as well, of course. Hermione, on the other hand, is a muggle. She's a single child, and she's still low-key a wizarding prodigy, at least in the academic sense. And Harry is an orphan who doesn't quite know his place in the world yet, but always the characters are judged on their actions and not their backgrounds, which, yeah, I think is a really great thing. The narrative for me in this book actually unfolds a lot better in this book, because I think the first book, the main idea is that Snape did it all, and it's sort of like at the last moment that it's revealed that it was actually Professor Quirrell, and it's kind of like, whoa, this big mic drop moment of, whoa, what the hell is going on? And in this book, it's actually thought that Malfoy is the one that's opened the Chamber of Secrets, and that he's doing this and he's doing these attacks because of his quite outright detest for the Mudbloods. And about halfway through the story, we actually, with the help of Polyjuice Potion, we get to learn that Malfoy doesn't actually know anything about it. He has no idea. He doesn't even know who opened the chamber last time. He is quite in the dark about it all. And I think it's this great move, because it kind of adds this layer to the story that is different from the first. You know, she doesn't wait again until the end to pull the rug from under us. And instead, she allows us a chance to explore the depths of this story a bit more and these characters a little more. Of course, this story does see the introduction of the first Horcrux. We, of course, don't know it at the time, but again, it's one of those moments that you really love to sort of see and reread again, because it feels like the first, at least for me it did, it felt like the first real introduction to Voldemort as the kind of chief villain of this story. And it was an interesting, I guess the development of Voldemort in this story is really interesting, because the whole story, there's kind of this idea that Hagrid did it, and that Hagrid actually opened the Chamber of Secrets 50 years ago, which resulted in the death of the girl who is later revealed as Moaning Myrtle. And the whole book made me feel uneasy, because if the chamber had been opened and a girl murdered, and then years later you learnt that Voldemort, you know, was also in the same year as Hagrid, surely suspicion would shift to Voldemort in that moment, you know, having committed that crime. He's openly against Mudbloods, as he calls them. And it's this idea that Tom Riddle at that point is in school and the girl dies and everyone thinks it's Hagrid, and that's fine, that makes sense. But then years later, still thinking that Hagrid is the chief reason for this when Voldemort was at school at the time, it felt like a plot hole for a large part of the story, I'll be honest. And J.K. Rowling actually expertly deals with this. And all it takes is a simple line, to be completely fair. But she says, you know, Dumbledore reveals that not a lot of people knew that Tom Riddle went on to become Voldemort, which is so simple. And it's quite elegant. And it's very simple. It's dealt with quite nicely. And of course, yeah, no one would suspect Tom Riddle to kill someone because no one knows that Tom Riddle is actually Voldemort. So, yeah, it was, I don't know, it kind of made me worry the entire story. And I don't know if I would have appreciated knowing that kind of idea earlier in the story somehow, because it would have alleviated those sort of tensions. But then I guess it's kind of, you can also ask the question of, and I guess this is a small plot hole, if Dumbledore knows that Voldemort is Tom Riddle, why doesn't he just reveal that to the Ministry of Magic, and then they don't have to actually take Hagrid away and put him in Azkaban for 2 months? Bad guy Dumbledore. But I don't know, there probably is a reason and I missed it. If I did miss it and you want to let me know, because yeah, that would be great to know. But small plot hole, it's all right, it's all good. Look, I think the second installment is it's a really great follow-up. It builds upon the magical world, it adds in a few more layers, which is really important. It adds in a few more layers, which is important to the depth of the story, to the growth of the story, to the the laying the foundations for later stories, which I absolutely cannot wait to get to. You sort of get to see the relationships and the characters develop more. Of course, they're growing up in front of us, which was one of the most special things, I think, as a child of similar age at that point. So yeah, we're just beginning to see the wider world peeled back. So I guess without further ado, what would I rate The Chamber of Secrets out of 5? I think this is a 4.2. It's another solid showing from J.K. Rowling. It's another solid book. It's building really nicely, and it just makes you really eager to get to the next one, The Prisoner of Azkaban. So stay tuned for that. So what am I reading this week? This week I am reading a book that caused quite a stir. It is Yellow Face by Rebecca F. Kuang. And wow, yeah, what a book that raises so many questions. So many questions about society and the cultural landscape we live in. It's a book that almost feels like you don't even need to know the storyline of the book, or it's almost the storyline isn't important in this book. It's just the questions that are being asked. It's very much, I was going to say maybe that's a bit unfair to say. It's very much a book club book, and I think it'd be a great book club book for the simple fact that I think everyone would have a very individualistic response to this, to ideas raised in this book, and I think that makes it the perfect book to bring to a book club, because it's never really much fun if everyone just agrees with the story. But no, fantastic story for raising questions. Look, I'm not going to say it's a perfect piece of literature, or at least I don't think it'll go down in history as a high piece of literature. That's my own opinion, but I think it does raise some really interesting questions that's worth having a discussion about. So yeah, having a lot of fun reading it. Don't quite know how it's going to end, but I mean, I'm going to find out shortly, so stay tuned for that. Now, before I close out the show, if you have listened this far, please consider hitting those 5 stars, like and subscribing. Though remember, this is not a cult. Just enjoy the show. If that's all you want to do, I appreciate that just as much. So thank you so much, guys. So I think it's time to end this episode, and today to take us away, I think some Leo Tolstoy, and he writes, "Everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself."